This episode is brought to you by Indeed. When your computer breaks, you don't wait for it to magically start working again. You fix the problem. So why wait to hire the people your company desperately needs? Use Indeed sponsored jobs to hire top talent fast. And even better, you only pay for results. There's no need to wait. Speed up your hiring with a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic Align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the nonstop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I'm creating a tribe of tech entrepreneurs that are on a mission to do something big and meaningful. I invite you to join the tribe as well, especially if you want to create change that matters and put your software business on momentum that you're proud of. The goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Julian Ranger, Executive Chairman and Founder of DigiMe.
Rich data. Now ask yourself, is there a company in the world that can do that? And people say, well, Google and Facebook.
They won't.
And Axiom. But if you take a circle of my data, they have a wedge, but they don't have my health, my purchases, or my media, my wearables and stuff.
True.
And in fact, because of all the stovepipes or silos, whichever analogy you like, it is impossible for any company to bring all that data together to get a rich data library of you. So we are effectively stopped from our future at this point. And the laws are shrinking those wedges that people have, but nobody said, well, how do I open up the whole circle to do it properly? Now, when you look at it, no company can, but there is one entity in the whole system that knows all about you and me.
It's yourself.
Correct, right? So you know where your data is. You have a right for that data, and you're the only entity with unlimited usage rights. When you understand those three things, you can only aggregate rich data at the individual. That's our big idea. And it's no less than enables the future of the world.
This is Julian. He's an aeronautical engineer specializing in interoperability and the military internet. He founded Stasys Ltd in 1987 and grew it to a staff of 230 with subsidiaries in the USA, Germany, Malaysia, and Australia prior to selling it to Lockheed Martin in 2005. He's an angel investor in more than 20 startup businesses, including firms such as Halo, DataSift, and Astrobotic. His passion about the power of personal data led him to build new businesses. And today, he's the executive chairman and founder of DigiMe, a company that's on a mission to enable the internet of me, enabling us to do amazing things with our personal data without compromising our privacy or security. And that inspired me. And hence I invited Julian to my podcast. We explore how the internet has become a place where no one is in control anymore over its own data, but no one is in control over all data. And exactly the latter is the problem that stops us from having the level of personalization we really want and the big breakthroughs we all need, like precision medicine. Fixing privacy, security, and consent is not the way forward. That's about stopping the bad stuff from happening. What we need is a way to share more and better data to make the good stuff happening without the bad stuff. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, why too often we approach the problem from the wrong end, by not looking far enough ahead, the simple desired outcome for the user. Secondly, what it requires to succeed when your big idea hits the road and you discover that the road is not quite as smooth as you'd liked. Thirdly, that everybody is lucky, but that many are just not seeing the luck around them. And fourthly, why, as entrepreneurs, we often spend too much time on the idea and the instantiation of it, and not enough time on the internal and external messaging. Well, hi, Julian. Thank you for making the time today and be a guest on my podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing with me. I mean, I got introduced to you by one of your colleagues, Sarah Lamp, who spoke highly about DigiMe. Interesting name in itself. It reminded me of a number of other things that I've been discussing earlier on. One of them with Sebastian van der Lans, who is really trying to make a big stamp on making the internet trustworthy. And I sort of put your the idea behind it in that same type of category, or at least in aligning with that. But let's talk about it later on. The way I normally start is to ask you for three words that you would use to describe yourself as an executive president and founder of the company.
Oh, well, I'm definitely an engineer. So you cut me every which way. I trained as an aeronautical engineer and built a military systems business, which I sold to Lockheed Martin. So worldwide. I always count myself as an engineer first. I like to think of myself as a visionary, somebody who comes up with new ideas and things like that, because I've done that through my career. And the other is, I suppose, I'm just odd. I love my sport, play rugby, cricket, do various things. And I don't probably conform to any particular form. So I could be gregarious, but I love sitting in my library, which you can see here, and reading books and doing all sorts of things. So I would say that the third part is just odd in various dimensions.
Good. You know, I mean, I wrote a book, The Remarkable Effect. And in this whole thing of being remarkable is for a big part is being unusual and surprise. And well, I mean, that's where people start talking about you. Sometimes the combinations really do it. So I like the combinations. I haven't heard them before. So talking about a company that you founded a number of years ago, and what's the big idea behind DigiMe?
So it's all relating to personal data. And the first thing you and most of your listeners would say, personal data, right, this is all the stuff that's robbed and tracked and taken, and it must therefore all be to do with privacy, security, and consent, and how we control and restrict the usage. And I'd say that's the second order part of what we're doing. The first order part of what we're doing is actually to enable you as an individual to share more and better personal data. So it's actually to enable you to share more, not less. Now, people often look a bit squirrely at me when I say that, but in fact, we have got to share more data, absolutely, and better data. So take a very simple example. And by the way, if we never talk about advertising today, that'd be great, because I see that as a corner of the web that is fine. I mean, it isn't fine. It does things very badly. But there are so many more uses of our data than that. Sure. And take medical as a good example. We want to move to precision medicine, personalized precision medicine, specifically about you or specifically about me. Now, if we're going to do that, we absolutely have to be able to share our health data since we were born, advanced wearables, genomics, the food we buy and eat, even social data, because it's an indicator of mental state. We can't do that. We can't bring that data together and share it. Nobody can access all of that data. Therefore, we will not get precision medicine. But it is the big hope for where we want to go to for the future of health. So we have to find a way to share more and better data. But of course, we have to do it with full privacy, security, and consent. Yeah. But the issue is actually, how do we share more and better data, not privacy, security, and consent? That's kind of like the issue is, how do I get electricity to my home so I can power everything? Oh, and it has to be safe, right? So you don't say the issue with electricity is making it safe. You say the issue is, how do I get it to my home?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The safe is just, of course, it's got to be safe. So we should be saying, with personal data, the issue is, how do we share more and better data and make it safe, so private, secure, and consented.
Interesting take that you have on it, because like you say, it's the instant thing that people think about when you're talking about data and privacy, that there needs to be more, well, the government needs to do more about it, more regulation, those type of things, just to limit the whole thing.
where you should take the reframe it and say, okay, how can we actually do more of this? And what needs to be true in that situation?
And do more better, correct. So the governments have definitely got to, like anything, governments and legislation is there in our societies to bound what is reasonable, ethical, trustworthy. So you talked about trust, right? So yeah. In Europe, we have GDPR, General Data Protection Regulations, and it's saying, actually, it is not right to take my personal data without me being aware of it. So we have a requirement for explicit and informed consent. 100% tick. We have the right for our data back so that we can use it. It's about us, it's mine. So data portability. Yep. You are not allowed to do things, except in limited circumstances, without my consent. Now, that's exactly right. Now, that should, and it will take time, but it should correct the problems of, you know, tracking me and everything else. And we'll talk about cookies later, but that's a special subset of this is stupid, right?
Yeah.
But so that's all about stopping the bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
What about the good stuff? How do we enable the good stuff? And the problem is we can't. Technologically, we're in a bit of a fix. Because if you think about, I gave you one example of why we need to share more and better data, but retail, we actually like personalization. In fact, the future of retail is hyper-personalization and experiences. We have to share more data.
Yeah.
And the future of banking, banks get criticized all the time for selling the wrong product to the wrong person at the wrong time. We don't have bank managers who know you and your family for 30 years anymore. So how can they know you digitally well enough to sell the right product to the right person at the time? More data. So there's an absolute clear need, let alone when we go to smart cities and all the other stuff that people want to do.
Yeah.
But the problem comes down that nobody can get what we would call a rich data set about you. Now, I won't go into all the details, but fundamentally, if you're a data person, you want five key characteristics. You want a single source of data, so you don't have the problems of miscorrelation. Is it Julian? You want multidimensionality. I've explained that for health. You want health, wearables, genomics, food, social, right? And nearly everything needs multidimensional. You need longitudinal or deep in time. Now, it might be 1, 2, 3 months of data. It might be lifetime.
Yeah,
you want data to be accurate, which people, again, look at me a bit strange and say, well, that's obvious. But actually, a lot of data used is secondhand or inferred, and you want it from source and validated as such. And I want to increase the velocity of data sharing. Velocity is a really important word, because if we think of velocity of money, that equates to GDP in the economy or value in the economy. So velocity of personal data sharing, more value for everybody, including ourselves. To do that, you've got to make it easy. Data is not easy to use. It comes in lots of different languages. Now, you're in Spain, I'm in the UK, we're blessed or unblessed that you speak very good English as well as probably very good Spanish and probably some other languages. I don't. So we've normalized all of that to English as we've chosen. You need to normalize all the data to make it easy for people to use. So single source, wide, deep, accurate, and normalized. Now, rich data. Now, ask yourself, is there a company in the world that can do that? And people say, well, Google and Facebook.
They won't.
And Axiom. But if you take a circle of my data, they have a wedge. A wedge, by the way, large part, which is shrinking because they've got to be doing it properly. But they don't have my health, my purchases, or my media, my wearables and stuff.
True.
And in fact, because of all the stovepipes or silos, whichever analogy you like, it is impossible for any company to bring all that data together to get a rich data library of you. So we are effectively stopped from our future at this point. And the laws are shrinking those wedges that people have, but nobody said, well, how do I open up the whole circle to do it properly?
Yeah.
Now, when you look at it, no company can, but there is one entity in the whole system that knows all about you and me.
It's yourself.
Correct. Right. So you know where your data is. You know which bank accounts you use, which social networks you use.
Yeah.
You have a right for that data. And you're the only entity with unlimited usage rights. So I can print off my health data, put it on the window of my car and drive it around and show everybody if I want to. Might be rather strange to do that, but I can. If anyone else did that, it's prison time for breaching my privacy. So when you understand those three things, you can only aggregate rich data at the individual. And that's the key insight for what my business does, that the only way to bring rich data together is at the individual. And when you do it at the individual, guess what happens? Privacy, security, and consent comes along for the ride. So by solving the big problem of how do we get that data together to then subsequently share it, we solve the other big problem of privacy, security, and consent.
Yeah.
So DigiMe is all about enabling you to get the data, you to hold it. So we, DigiMe, we don't see, touch, or hold your data ever. It's all edge processing. And then you to decide when you're going to share it with whom, so people can ask you. And that's our big idea. And it's no less than enables the future of the world.
Let me make a small interruption here. Julian just made an excellent remark about the magic concept that underpins his business. They've deliberately decided not to approach the problem in a traditional way and create something hugely complex. They thought about the outcome and what it would look like if it was easy. And that's by putting each individual at the center of their own digital life, opening up a wealth of innovation opportunities previously thought of as impossible. This is a trait remarkable software companies master. They focus on the essence, they create new value possibilities, and aim to be different, not just better. You can master these traits as well. And I've got two options for you to start. Firstly, read or listen to my book, The Remarkable Effect. You can find that on Amazon.com. But you can also download the Kindle version for free on my website. Go to valueinspiration.com/book. Secondly, get into action right away and surround yourself with a group of like-minded people, tech founders and CEOs that will help you deliver on your top priorities with more impact by removing your blind spots, challenging you to explore new paths and sharpening your thinking. How? Just visit valueinspiration.com and see the videos where many of your peers share the experiences with our tribe and what they've come to value most. Back to the interview.
So if we think that the internet has created a mass of value, largely in some big companies, but we've got value too. I mean, the network's been able to do stuff. We've seen it in COVID, amazing stuff, you know, remote shopping, all the rest of it. But if we want to take the next leap, we can only do it by putting the individual at the center of their digital lives. And that will open up what's called patient centricity, nothing less than a full radical way forward with health. By the way, a bit like, especially in less developed countries, will allow their health systems to leap forwards a bit like they did from, you know, they couldn't afford to put fixed telephony in, they went to mobile. This is the leap that allows them to have a full digital health economy without having to waste the vast fortunes that other countries have tried.
Exactly.
It allows us to open up data in all areas. And so, you know, who knows? I'm not a great economist, and economists have looked at this and said, well, it'll be worth €1 trillion a year to the EU. It'll certainly be worth a very enormous amount to all of us when we're back in the center. And that's the key thing that we've enabled. And that spent a long time getting to, but it's now here today. So.
Well, I'm fascinated with the moonshot, I would call it almost. And I really like the standpoint that you have, like not only stop the bad stuff from happening, but really enable the good stuff from happening and bring it down to its core. And yeah, I'm really fascinated to see, I mean, how do you create that flywheel now to get this going?
Yeah, and that's been the real issue. Right. We've actually been ready for people to use the product since beginning of 2018, but companies weren't really looking. So we've had a lot of companies doing proof of concepts with us. We've worked in pharma, across banking, across retail, proving that this all worked, proving that individuals are happy with it. We've integrated with the UK health system, the Dutch, the Icelandic, the US. We've been approved by government. So an awful lot of work. And moonshot's really quite interesting. Actually, funny enough, one of my favorite investments I made was in a company called Astrobotic back in 2007. And they're landing on the moon later this year on a commercial entity. So I actually like to think about, I'm very interested in space and aviation. I'm going to go to space with Virgin Galactic. But so I'm fascinated by the whole thing. So I would actually say we've landed on the moon, because we've created it, we've done it. But it's like the first landing on the moon. We haven't created a habitat. We haven't created an ecosystem on the moon, but we've definitely landed. Now, what does that mean? We've built an amazing technology stack to do this so that it all works, it's secure and private. We've proven that we can take off, we've proven that we can land, you know, all of that has happened.
Yeah.
But now how does it scale? Well, the first thing and the most important thing is you don't have to get your data first for it then to be useful to someone else. So it's not a chicken and egg of build 10 million user base and then companies can come to it. You don't have to do that. So let's imagine that you're a health app, a diabetes app, right? You want my wearables and my medications.
Yeah.
So I may never have heard of DigiMe, but in your app, you then say, we need your health data and your wearables and medications. And so what happens is you integrate the DigiMe API, right? You have to register for a consent certificate. That's the thing you have to do as a business. That meets the bar for explicit informed consent and it's standard form, and it's very clear what it is you're asking for.
Yep.
You literally put that token for the consent certificate in our API, and then on my device, inside your app, inside your diabetes app, the consent certificate will open up. And I'll say, oh, right, fine, yes. And I say yes, right? And then I can then directly authenticate those two data channels or whatever for the first time, if I haven't done it before. And then the data can flow to the app straight away. Even though I've never used DigiMe before, then I subsequently can download DigiMe and connect and have it. And then I can reshare it, reuse it, do other stuff. But so the key here is you don't have to have DigiMe to start the process, right?
Yep.
So the first time you do it, you get in. So our job is to say, well, what are the use cases that power this forwards to begin with, and then get companies doing that? And we're at the process. Actually, the market was getting very good at back end of 2019 into early 2020. And of course, we all know what happened at the beginning of 2020, COVID. So a lot of the companies said, oh, we're not doing anything new, and hunkered down. So it was actually really a bit of a kick in the teeth if you're running a business trying to open up a new area, right? It was like everyone was saying, forget the moon, let's just stick on the earth for a while. But the interesting thing is what's happened in COVID. Actually, people have had to do remote video consultations for GPs, haven't had their health data. Ooh, that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
How do we do that? And then we've got health passes, the ability to be able to travel, to suddenly have our data. So we've got a live health pass called Concentrin.
Exactly.
The big things. So all of a sudden, people have realized the need for this data, need for the individual to have the data in their own control, 100% privately. We don't want governments and others tracking us. So it's now really opening up. So we're seeing health, huge movement in health. So quite a lot of apps now starting to build on us. We'll see some retail personalization happening, coming with you. Yep. Value exchanges. So this is the year when you're now starting to see those buildings on the moon being, you know, created and populated. Yeah. And the ecosystem going. So I think for the next 12 months, most people will see this in health passes and in a few other things. Within 2 years, people will start hearing about it on a daily basis, right? It'll become more things. Within 3 to 4 years, I think all of us will think, well, of course I have my data and look at all the things I can do with it.
Yeah, you need to get that flywheel go of that wave going behind you. And
we're not the only ones doing this. So there's, if people are interested, they can go to mydata.org, and there's a whole group of people moving to this human, patient, citizen-centric model. We are the leaders, and I'm happy to say that. You know, we are in advance. We started, we've got the full things, but there's lots of people moving in this direction. So people will get to hear about it more and more, and then governments are pushing it. So the EU's said they want every citizen in the EU to own their own health data by 2030, right?
There you go.
And it can happen faster than that now. But in other words, there is sort of, you know, a tidal wave of stuff moving it this way. Our difficulty as an entrepreneur is I'm in the leading wave. So you're trying to have to move stuff out, do a lot of explanations and all of
exactly.
that. It's good fun.
Fascinating. And it's interesting to see that that you get both like a push and a pull from B2C, the consumer side, also the B2B side, and that these two are sort of meeting in the middle. And I agree with you. The moment your use cases increase in breadth, that it's not only health anymore, but possibly also fitness and well-being, and then maybe indeed also financial, that you will get more and more of those signals, and people then start to kind of talk about it to their peers. And that's where the whole thing starts to.
And the fun thing is, there's a great quote that I love. So as an engineer, I told you I'm an engineer through and through, a visionary. My favorite quote is from a guy called Oliver Wendell Holmes. And he said, "I don't give a fig for the simplicity this side of complexity, but I'd give my life for the simplicity the other side of complexity." And you have to think about that for a while. And you think about when we try and solve a problem, we get a very simple answer and it's too simple. So we add a bit and then we add a bit and we add a bit and we add a bit. And we get this sort of mound of complexity. And the real innovation is when you drive right through the mountain, if you like, to the other side and have a very simple solution the other side, right? And I'm going to tell you, that's what DigiMe, that's what human centricity is. Because all of a sudden, when you own the data, as a business, it's hugely complex right now, today, before us, to get data. How do you get it? Oh, God, I've got to get, and how do I correlate it? And all the quality isn't good enough. And all the privacy, costs millions. And so therefore, very few companies can do it. But when it's all you have to do to access better data than Facebook has on anybody or Google, all you have to do is register for a consent certificate and poke it into an API. And if someone says yes, you get a stream of high quality, normalized data, right? You can do something, I'm not joking, in a day, and I can actually show you how to do it in hours. You can get better data than you would have ever thought possible in an hour. So you don't have to, as a business, you don't have to have a year-long study on how do I get this and how can I afford 5 million. You could do this with one person, could show and do it. And because the data comes from the individual and it's accurate from source, it's so high quality that you don't have to worry about massive AI to pull out features that enable you to do a value exchange. You can pretty much do it with simple, you know, software algorithms that do stuff. In 10 lines of code, you can pull out features that enable you to tailor or do stuff. And so it really is. And in fact, my biggest task isn't convincing people that the individual has the best data, because most people intuit that very quickly when we talk about it. It's actually to show them how damn simple it is. Because when you've been trained that it's hugely complex to get data, and then there's all the compliance risk, and then there's the how the hell do I do an AI division? We're only a small company. I don't have AI. It's, where do I hire those for? And when you show them, it's literally a couple of lines of code. You've got the data. And then, boy, it's so good you could do that. It's almost like fall off your chair time. And it's you can't believe it. So it's that. It's almost like take somebody from the, when I started computing was in 79 and I had a dial-up modem to a PDP 11 in Hatfield and I punch taped. If you took me and put me in front of the computer we're doing this on right now and showed me how easy email or whatever, I'd say, get off. It can't be that easy.
Right? That's true. Yeah.
It's almost like taking people into that piece is how easy it is to actually use. And literally we've got people who come and they look and say, well, we could do that in a week. I said, yeah. So the difficulty is now no longer getting the data. It's now no longer processing it and pulling out value pieces. Actually, the difficulty for businesses is what's your value proposition, right? Why would an individual share the data with you? And that is the business's job to work that out. Right?
Exactly.
Now, if you've got a diabetes app and you're going to keep me alive, that's a pretty good value proposition. I'm probably going to pay for the app and share my data. But some other use cases, maybe you have to think about it some more. So what we're saying is data is now fully democratized. The smallest company in the world can get better data than Google's got, provided they've got a value proposition that you, the individual, say, yeah, I want that. And of course, I'm going to share my data because I know exactly what you're using it for. You're not using it for anything else. And I agree that value proposition.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because that's indeed where things can really go fast or completely stall. And I think that's also where a big part of I'm in that business because there's so many companies that certainly don't know how to do that yet. So what I'm interested in is to kind of go a little bit on the journey that you took in creating the product or the, I'm not sure even if it's a product, it's more of a platform, I would say.
Yeah.
Like I said, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect. And what I'm always interested in is what did you do differently? Possibly that's the wrong question because it wasn't existing before. What did you do that makes the product remarkable for organizations to say, I want to use this?
Well, the idea came from my previous work where I'd done networking and data and interoperability for the military for 20 years and And I was an expert in that and built a big company. So I had a leg up in that I kind of had a simile to which I could see could solve this problem. And that's quite often the case. You take a solution from over here and apply it over here. So that, that was the huge leg up. But to actually make it usable has been quite a journey, because when we started getting the data, could we hold it? Okay, it took too long. Mobiles didn't work very well, but how could you do it in the cloud, but do it in such a way that we don't see touch and hold it? And so that took a team, right? There's no bad about it. I've been the visionary, and we haven't really changed the vision since 2013 when we sort of fleshed it all out. But how we implement it, how we modify it, what I explained to you, that a business does not require an individual to have DigiMe to start with, doesn't even require the individual to download DigiMe. But boy, that's taken a long time. For a long time, you did have to download DigiMe and come saying, oh, two apps, not sure about that. The team has managed to work their way through all of those problems. But we had to go to market. We had to push it in front of people, take the comments back. And, you know, some of them, you know, it's quite harsh. But you must love the idea. Yes, but I don't want this. Okay, well, we'll redo it. So it's because it's been completely new, it's been a hell of a journey and a really committed team. I mean, you know, I'm probably slightly old fashioned, actually. I like people who stay with a company for 3-5 years plus, right? Not sort of come in and go. And I happily tell you that at DigiMe, you know, most of our staff have been here for quite a long time. They've taken that journey and they live that and have pushed through with it. So the biggest single thing has been the time. It's the hardest thing, right? As an entrepreneur, if you'd asked me, should I have done this? I'd say yes, because of course I love doing it and everything else. But it's been really difficult because we were too early to market and timing's a real problem, you know, when you're trying to be first. So we would not have survived were it not for the fact that we've got a bunch of very good investors that have carried on investing in the business and in that region. And I think they will be handsomely rewarded, but they didn't necessarily know that down the stage. So it's been a very up and down journey for, I'd say, the last 3 or 4 years, where we've been there into the market. We've had to iterate the technology to make it really simple and everything else. But
so what were the major hurdles then to overcome?
So the major one actually was to do this in such a way that it's, we don't see touch and hold it, but you're not reliant on processing on the phones, because they don't, the background processing on phones is terrible. And you can't have all the data coming to the phone because you use people's data plans. So we have to use the cloud. But of course, if you use the cloud, then that's our server, then we see touch and hold it. But what we did was actually flip it on its edge. And we said, your processing on your device will trigger its own cloud services when it needs it. That will run stateless. And when it finishes, it evaporates. And so your data sits on your phone and then in your own personal repository, which can be a default cloud, personal storage, or it could be Google Drive, Dropbox, whatever. But making that all work in a non-classic way so that it's fully private took a lot of work. And that security model, which we've been audited with by governments, et cetera, meant for a long time you had to have two apps. So you had to have the requesting app and you had to have DigiMe. Now, it wasn't that complicated to download DigiMe. It was only a single thing, but people didn't like it. So then modifying that security model, but keeping it so that you could have the security and the privacy whilst actually doing it so that a business, you didn't have to download DigiMe first, has been quite a trial. But we've got there. So it's when the idea hits the road, you suddenly discover that the road is not quite as smooth and as nice as you like. And
yeah, of course.
You need four-wheel drive and ability to go over ruts and things like that. So that's been the issue.
Yeah, at the end, you know, of course, there are so many people to convince in this. First of all, you need a company that say, okay, I believe in this and I want to do these things ethical. Of course, there's a lot more push these days to do it ethical. But how many people still have cookies, you know, on their website and they love it? So how to get rid of that? Then, of course, there's on the other side, the pull from the consumer side that they want it as well. And so many people don't even realize where the data is going.
But I think with the cookies is interesting. Companies do it because they need it for other things, but actually they don't get very good data. And if you're a small retailer or even a medium-sized retailer, you don't get any data other than what you get from your own loyalty program. So as I say, the biggest single thing is actually people don't know that they can now get really good data.
Yeah.
And that's what they've all wanted, but they've not had access to before, right? But I don't think individuals will understand it until they've done it a few times, because we natively don't like to manage stuff, right? You know, we're all told to have budgeting programs to manage our finances. I don't know how many people do, but I bet you it's less than 10%. So we want the value, but without the work. So what we're trying to do with DigiMe is provide it so you can get the value without the work, but you've got all the safety will come with it. And then you'll understand the benefit downstream. But yeah, it's one of the other big challenges has been messaging, right? You know, I hope I can now describe it fairly well, right? But go back 2 or 3 years and it may well have been a much more tortured, long-winded discussion, which I'm sure we will continue to do better in describing it. So messaging has been a real issue as well, learning to what's important and what's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an incredible journey, as you're saying, and full of very critical decisions. So what decision do you believe has been super important that you had to make at some point and that you were not sure about, but that it turned out really, really good for this?
Oh, it's interesting because there's lots of them. Is there a critical decision? I think the first one was we were right to say that we would not see touch and hold, but that meant the architecture is much more difficult and expensive. A lot of people would probably have said, well, let's do it so we hold it first and then it's easy. Was it the right decision? I still think it was, because we've got the right product at the end of it, but it meant 2 years to really build even the first version that could properly do that, because it was the hardest thing. The next hardest is the one that we've solved more recently, which, as I say, was forced on us, which was, no, you've got to find a way to do this without downloading the DigiMe app first.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because companies may be wrong in technical terms and in commercial terms, because we don't know their customers. We can't sell it even if they're in our app. But mental model was, hold on, we're giving you our customers to get the data. You're going to resell. Well, we can't. But nonetheless, just having that conversation occluded or made more difficult the understanding of how easy it was. So we had to find a way, and that has been painful, because you know that you're right, but you're also wrong because the customer is right and they were telling us, but we found a way. So we were wrong, and I particularly was wrong, right? But now we're right.
That we found a way. That's the journey at the end, you know, and it's getting to product market fit. Yeah, I mean, I can give you countless of examples where this has been the case.
Yeah.
So what have been the biggest learnings from this? What have been something that you would do differently next time?
Well, my biggest learning is timing, because I built my first business and we were profitable for month one because we were consultants. This was back in 86. I was only 23 doing merchant. I built that up over 20 years and worldwide and did very well, thank you very much. And I had lots of learnings and business discussions and made mistakes and everything else. But nonetheless, I was always okay for funds and cash and stuff because we built it up. The pain of the last 3 years when we were too early and trying to fund that because you're too early is really difficult, really, really difficult. So what would I have done differently? If I, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, and I'm not sure one can ever have this, right,
that's
in the
true.
Way, right, I would have been investigated, done a simpler thing to begin with, done some more tests, and I wouldn't have pushed the button to build the bigger platform until probably 2018. Now, the question, of course, is with the benefit of hindsight, would I have pushed the button at the right time to then be here now where we are today with the platform we need? Yeah, maybe not. So when is the right time? And so I hadn't appreciated at all. I kind of traveled in hope that this was such an obvious answer that once we produced it, people would then flock to it. And of course, it's never quite like that. But I did assume that the market would be ready for it because everybody wants better data. But actually, they spent 2018 and most of 2019 looking inwards. How do we stop GDPR and other things stopping us having the data and things like that? And they weren't ready for it. So, yeah, that's been the biggest learning for me. But I can't give you an answer, because I think if you've got an idea and an entrepreneurial idea, sometimes the first mover wins and other times it's the second and third mover. And I don't think you know when you start which one that's going to be. So, you know, Salesforce, he was first doing SaaS and he's made a fortune. Facebook definitely wasn't first, right? And he's been the thing. So you take any companies, there's people who are first and followers. And if somebody could work out how to predict, could they give me a ring in case I ever do anything again?
No, I mean, that is impossible. Nobody has a better crystal ball than someone else. There's a lot of, I mean, everything that happens in the future is, yeah, you need to take with a pinch of salt. It proves again how important it is to keep your eye on what is happening externally. Because, I mean, what I read between the lines is that pretty much all your challenges have come from other things that have happened in the market at the same time. GDPR, for example, COVID, all kind of regulations that have been put on.
So the one thing you've got to be as an entrepreneur is a persistent bugger with lots of energy, you know, because however, I mean, I know some people, it suddenly miraculously happens and it's successful. And it kind of, I could almost say that with my first business. It, you know, it took time to grow to big, but it was just right time, right place, everything worked, right?
That's luck.
But that is such a small percentage of the overall. And most of us doing the entrepreneur journey, and I've invested in others and stuff, you know, it's perseverance in the face of whatever happens. And I think that the thing with being an entrepreneur is you, if you look back, if something fails, right, I think you almost have to say to yourself, if you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, I carried that on for too long. I should have quit earlier. Yeah. Because if you quit when you really should have quit, then you probably would have quit earlier than you should have quit. You
said, true.
You kind of got to quit when it's... People say, well, why didn't you quit 6 months earlier or a year earlier? Well, I couldn't. But if you had, you probably wouldn't
believe
have
in a vision.
Type of entrepreneur to get to the point. So almost by definition, if you fail, somebody should be able to kick you and say, well, you should have quit earlier. And you could say, yeah, probably, but I didn't because there would have... We've only got to where we are now through bloody-minded persistence. And not just of me, the management team, the staff working through it all. True. So, you know, COVID year, you know, the staff really stepped up. We had to go short hours for some time to get some things going, everything else. And, you know, that you do when you've got a really good team. So every single member of the team has been persistent. I may be slightly more persistent than most because I'm bloody-minded.
Yeah, it makes me think about a couple of other things. I just had a conversation with Quintus Willems, the CEO of the Share Council, and he also has this moonshot of capital, kind of equaling capital, how do you say that, capital division, making sure that everybody in the world can have the same type of...
Access to capital, fair access.
Access to capital, my God. Yeah. That came out. And I think everybody is saying yes to his idea. From a 30,000 foot, it's like, yeah, brilliant. Of course, we all want that. It's the same thing with this one. But then the way it's going into market is in a different way, with a different message. You know, the consumer needs to believe in it because he needs to get one or two benefits to get going. Businesses need to have a really good value proposition to say, okay, you're now having this, but you can get that. So, and only when all of those things kind of stand in line, you get that momentum. You're so dependent on so many other people to make this, moonshot a reality. You say, we have landed, but now it's like, okay, now how do we get the population there?
So absolutely. No, I've got to get the rest of the population to move to the moon ecosystem. And that
exactly takes time. Yeah.
It's exciting.
And it is exciting.
And it's exciting for businesses, but they've got to want to do it in and amongst all the other things that they have to do.
So, I got one question on that. Like, what in the experience that you got right now, what has made you most proud to see when businesses approach this, take it on, and get results?
Oh, I love it on health. So, my own experience of health, luckily I've had no diseases and everything, but I've died once and nearly died twice and smashed my body up, and the health system brought me back to life at 18 and fixed it. So I have a personal connection to health. And just seeing the light in the medical community when they can see what's going to happen with what's called patient centricity and how it fixes so many problems and where it will take us and the inclusion. And our VP of health has his own health issues and stuff. He's nearly been operated on several times with wrong data and everything else is committed.
Yeah.
And I remember when I interviewed him and you could just see that passion for doing this right. And I have to say, I hope the business is successful. Yes, it'll be very valuable. Yes, it will change stuff. But just the pride in knowing what we can do for health, right? And the fact that it's kind of obvious, but it's completely ethical. I mean, because I don't see Touch and Hold It, this is a 100% ethical business that will be profitable. It's lovely, right? But that pride in being able to see what we are going to do in health and seeing pharma companies, doctors, patients, groups, and others, I'm kind of impatient to see it happen faster, to be honest. I really, really would love to see it happen faster, but health is slow moving in many ways because of stuff, but it is happening quite fast. Take Holland, for example. Holland, yeah. I told you about the EU want everybody by 2030. Holland have this MedMay program, and they're subsidizing companies like us to actually get the data in the hands of individuals. They want to make it happen faster. Yeah. With Iceland, we created the world's first patient-facing API back in 2016 as an early trial. And just seeing that stuff, it's nice because it will actually make a positive difference to every human on the planet with their health, right? And it's not just going to be DigiMe. As I said, there'll be others doing this as well, right?
Sure.
But this whole move to human centricity, patient centricity,
is
going to be fundamental to our health. And we're seeing quite a bit of this in COVID with being able to do stuff electronically and others. We'll see it with the health passes and going on forward. So, yeah, if there's one thing that keeps the light on for me, it's my own personal connection to health and seeing that difference that it's going to make is just huge. It'll affect all sectors of our interactions, but health...
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
So, I mean, I mentioned my book earlier on. What I'm always interested in is to hear from the entrepreneurs that I got on my podcast, like, what do you believe is the secret to build a software company that's remarkable, that people keep talking about?
It's got to be, if you want to make it remarkable, there has to be a step change. There has to be that, I think, the simplicity, the other side of complexity, right? You've seen something that others haven't seen. Then you've got to build a good team because you can't do it alone anymore at all, right? And in those types of stuff. And that team means the people developing at the, you know, the lowest levels to the highest levels. But it also includes your investment team, right? The people investing in you. Right. Unless you can afford to do it yourself or it's something you can do without investment, when some can. Right. But the investment team is important because you're going to hit roadblocks and you're going to need them to go with you. Right. So it's not just money. They're not just wallets. They're people who are going with you. So it is an idea which is simple. The other side of complexity, it is your team and that team covers the wider. And then, it's the ability to actually look out. As you said, and you said it better than I did, the world affects you. So you better be looking at how that's happening and be able to respond to it. And then, of course, as we said earlier on, just sheer bloody perseverance, right? You know, to push through would be my key characteristics, I think, to get you to where it is. You can do it without some of those others. There's an analogy I also use. Of course, you need luck, but I actually believe that everybody is lucky. So I use an analogy of red buses in London. They call them the luck bus. They're always going past you. But if you're looking down or in the windows of the shop, you don't see it going past. You actually have to see the luck bus and climb aboard and take it to its destination. As long as you can do that, because we all need our luck, right? Whether it's a contact of somebody and it just went deeper, whether it's whatever it may be. But I actually do believe that everybody is lucky. They're just not necessarily always seeing the luck around them.
Yeah, that's a good point. A good analogy as well. I love that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure whether this is going to add. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to ask, because the first one was about how to build a remarkable software business. But from all the tidbits of wisdom that you've gained over time, what would be a do, but also a don't, if you had to advise or give your, if you have to share it with peers in your league?
What would be a do? The interesting thing, if I look at one of the big criticisms of me is the vision is how I can get it expressed to others, right? So I would spend more time trying to simplify the messaging of what you're trying to achieve, right? I think as an entrepreneur, you can spend too much time on the idea and the instantiation of it and not enough time on the messaging, both for your own team and externally. And the more I've worked with others and everything else and people who are experts at messaging, and I get training for that just in how to present and do stuff and other things. I think that the messaging is the big do, both internally, whatever else, that I think a lot of people forget or don't put enough time in, and you can always do more on that. And the don't is don't let worries creep up on you. If you're always going, I said I'm a bit of an oddball earlier on, but I'm lucky stress doesn't seem to override me. I'm not going to say one day I won't get hit by it, because I've seen many friends have been, and you shouldn't take it lightly. But I do believe that you can't worry about things that you can't control.
True.
Right? And so as an entrepreneur, you've got to look at the things you can control and deal with the things you can't. But worry doesn't get you anywhere, right? Because there's enough. If you're a worrier, then there's so much that you could worry about. So the don't worry about things you can't control. Look at them, understand them, but don't worry about them.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice. So what is next? What's the greatest aspiration for the next 2 years?
Well, to make this now become normal. What I would want is the listeners of your podcast may never have heard of DigiMe, may never have realized that they should be holding their data and about human centricity or my data, right? The next is so that in the next 2 to 3 years, everybody's heard about it.
Yeah.
That's a big ask to get everybody to hear about it, but I don't think it's outrageous, actually. I think it's you know, once it gets moving, it will become the thing. So that's my personal big ask, is to get that out there. And then to get businesses, right, and say to them, you know, have a look. Because if you're sitting there today saying, God, I wish I knew more about my customers, or I wish I could, you know, I've got this app service that I do, but if I just knew more about them, I could do this wonderful thing, keep them healthier, give them more tailored experiences, give them a better time, a better service. Just have a look, right? Not just at us, right? Look out there. As I said, go to mydata.org, where there's a whole series of people trying to do this type of thing. It's the sort of, you know, the global organization for it. Look at us. Come to DigiMe. Give me a call. Just have a look, because I think you'll see that the value you can provide your customers, patients, governments even looking at it, right, for doing stuff, is so big that you can make that leap much quicker than you think. Because I would just love, I mean, you said 2 years. I don't know how much I'll have achieved. Everybody hear about it in 2 years, but I'm going to give it my best shot. But definitely 3 to 5 years, blimey. If the world isn't human-centric by then we've missed the boat.
I mean, I love this ending, and this is exactly why I have people like you on this podcast. It's tech entrepreneurs on a mission, and this is what it is all about. And you need to have big dreams and moonshots to do, and I like your point about that you have to create a step change. I mean, well, thank you for that. So where can people go to find out more about DigiMe or to connect with you?
Right. So to connect with me, you can connect with me on Twitter or LinkedIn. So Twitter is @RangerJ. So Ranger and then J. And please feel free to DM me or do whatever else. And in terms of or on LinkedIn, and in terms of the company, go to digi.me, digi.me. And if you're a developer, a software person, you want to try it, just go to developers.digi.me and fill your boots, try it away. And the other one was that I like to suggest people see the wider picture, go to mydata.org, which is a great place to learn more about the whole of human centricity and everything else from there as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Julian. This was a fascinating call. Thank you for your openness about sharing some of the wisdom, the experiences that you've had. And good luck on making this reality, because I think we will all love it when it's there.
I hope so. And it's a pleasure. And thank you very much for inviting me. It's always nice to have the opportunity to explain what we're doing and talk about it. Like it nearly everybody, I suspect, I hope we can meet in person in the not too distant future, that we crack the current problems in the world and get back to a normal where face-to-face is going to happen as well.
Well, let's end with that. I really hope that as well. It will be fascinating. Thanks.
Thank you.
And this ends my conversation with Julian. I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Julian Ranger, Executive Chairman and Founder of DigiMe. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make.
If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at don.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.